Welcome to Talent Hub Talk. I'm Ben Duncombe, and on this podcast, I will be interviewing prominent and inspirational figures from both the local ANZ and global Salesforce Ohana. In today's episode, I'm joined by Toby Wilcock. Toby is the CEO of Cloudworks in Sydney. And through this episode, we had a really interesting chat about Toby's journey through the Salesforce ecosystem, his experience from working for different scale of Salesforce partner, and the challenges that come with each. We then really focus in on the sales side of the Salesforce ecosystem and get an understanding of the relationship between the partner and Salesforce businesses, so the relationship and how that works from a sales perspective. We then look at sales cycles and if they are different between different consulting organizations and how a Salesforce project, I guess, comes to be. We look at the tricks and tips for managing pipeline and headcount, making sure you have the right people at the right time and not too big a bench. And then look at some of the changes that Toby has seen in the ecosystem over the years from what a customer looks like and their expectations of a partner. Toby provides some advice on what people should kind of be aware of or what they should be looking for if they're pursuing a sales career in the Salesforce ecosystem. And then we look at how his background in sales has helped him in his role as CEO. So really, really interesting episode. I think we shed a lot of light on the sales side of the Salesforce world and I guess what brings a Salesforce project to market and the relationships behind that from a Salesforce and partner perspective. So I hope you enjoy this episode. And if you do, please subscribe for future episodes that are coming through.
So Toby, thanks so much. You are the third Cloudworks guest on the podcast, which I think is a record so far. So thank you very much.
Who was number three?
No, you're the third.
I'm the third, but Chris?
We had Kieran, but this was before Cloudworks, but he's now a member of the team, so I'm including him.
Smarky. Nice one. Well, it's a pleasure to be here. I actually feel, when I got your email, I was like, really? I'm humbled.
Yeah, look, I've got some really interesting stuff to run through, and I think there's no one better in the ecosystem to talk about the world of sales in the Salesforce world. But before we get into all of that, it would be great to understand your story before you join this ecosystem and kind of what brought you into the world of Salesforce.
Yeah, well, I have been a sales guy for, you know, many, many years, and kicking off in like manufacturing in the 90s. That was where I was my first, you know, taste of it all. And I was like very excited. I think I did a lot of acting as a kid, and I thought, okay, I need to use my presentation skills and show and all that sort of stuff because I really enjoyed it. But then I guess fast forward, I was in media and then moved into kind of like technology events in banking. And I was exposed to the likes of Salesforce, Cloud Sherpas, I mean, Oracle, Dell, all of these folks. And I was lucky enough to meet some pretty, you know, interesting individuals that, you know, took a punt on me basically and said, hey, come on, come over this side of the fence into, you know, the services and IT space. And I was actually constantly thinking, how do I get over there? How do I, you know, make that jump? And that was my first coming into Cloud Sherpas in, you know, 2013, I think it was my first foray into the Salesforce ecosystem. Mind you, use Salesforce quite a bit, you know, as a salesperson. So it was like, you know, I got it. I understood CRM. But then it was like just a wild ride from there. I mean.
So as a salesperson, did you enjoy using Salesforce? Because it's kind of hit or miss sometimes when you speak to people.
Yeah, no, I think all salespeople hate using a CRM. I'm dead honest.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's necessary. I mean, it's a powerful tool when it's used right. And that's, I guess, part of the ethos of Cloudworks is people, process, technology, you know, in that order. One, be the, you know, the right person sitting in that role, like a person who's not really in sales, doing sales, you know, that's a challenge. But then if that process is a little bit funky, then the tech is not going to help that so much, right? Sure. But, well, you know, when Salesforce came along and the ability to make updates in situ as opposed to doing all your admin on a Friday, that was the bit that, you know, when I first was out there, you know, talking to folks about, you know, moving towards Salesforce and that sort of thing, I just, you know, flip my screen around and go, well, this is how I capture my day. And I'm able to do all the stuff that I like doing, like getting in front of people, talking, you know, playing the guitar to try and, you know, get a sale across the, whatever it is, sorry, being silly, it was allowing me to do more of the productive stuff. Right? Sure. So it was a no-brainer.
Yeah, makes sense. I was hoping you had your guitar. I was going to ask you to play a tune at some point. And I also don't want to overlook the fact that you were a child actor. So any hits? Have we seen you on TV before and we just don't know it?
No, it was more on the stage.
Okay.
Actually, a little bit of extra on Home and Away, and I got one little stint on The Great Outdoors, but nothing to write home about.
No.
Well, I did live in Asia for about 4 years, and I was working on a low-budge community TV channel, being a TV presenter, but that was, yeah, that was before kids. That was, got a haircut, got a real job after that.
If anyone can find any of these clips and send them in, there'll be a reward.
Yeah, exactly. I'll pay the reward.
So let's talk Salesforce now. So obviously Cloud Sherpas was your first entry into the ecosystem. And yeah. You hadn't sold services before, is that right?
No, actually. Yeah, it was, like I said, a couple of individuals took a punt. I was just like hell-bent on getting a result, and I just absorbed as much as possible. And I think sales, the key to it is just relentless optimism and hard work. There's no kind of trick or sort of shortcut to it all. And I just bunkered down. And I think also the people I was working with, there's a saying I've heard somewhere, maybe it was Anthony Robbins, success leaves clues. So I was just really watching, key people, and that rubbed off on me. And, sales, bit of luck, it goes your way sometimes, and things, things went well from there. And the services side of things, which I felt, looking back on, I'll say on the product side or the services side or which kind of sort of area you sell, really resonated with me personally, having been raised by a psychologist and an engineer. It's a lot of like empathy and listening and all the rest of it, all those good things you hear that, people say that is the key to sales. It is that, right? And when you're consulting, you're there at the coalface, down in the weeds and all that sort of stuff, working with lots of different stakeholders and having them, execute the implementation and get to that point, that transformation, that sort of stuff. So that really resonated with me. So that maybe made it a little bit easier than others. But yeah, first into services and, Agile, Waterfall, all this sort of stuff. it was exciting.
Yeah,
it was exciting.
I can imagine. And Cloud Sherpas at the time would have been a great, exciting business to work for. Lots of growth, good team.
Yeah. I mean, when I think about the folks I was working with and where they've all gone to, and even me, just how did this happen? CloudWorks. it's exciting. It was really phenomenal time, and you don't realize it at the time. You kind of look back and you go, "Wow, that was the halcyon days."
yeah, for sure. So post Sherpas, what was from there to now? What's the kind of journey look like?
Well, it was kind of like, for me, the path that I've gone on, it wasn't planned out as it's been, right? I've sort of leaned into certain situations and gone, well, Accenture just bought us. Well, here's a back door into a place that I would never have, I don't think, one, they probably wouldn't have hired me, or it's not maybe what I would have been looking for, but it was a phenomenal experience, right, of the people I met there and what they were doing, and exposure to, I worked at an organization of 400,000 or 500,000 staff, right? What's that like?
Yeah.
That's phenomenal. And every organization has its idiosyncrasies and whatnot, but that was phenomenal. And then, but I realized it was kind of not really my DNA in the sense of where I'm best suited into that small business hustle,
mm-hmm.
but incredible exposure. And then obviously moved into SaaS Focus, where another great partner that was doing a lot of great stuff in India and then growing in Australia, and I saw an opportunity there to help Amit. And I've just been blessed by meeting some really awesome people along the way, and that's part of what's driven a lot of my decisions is, you are what you eat, you are who you hang out with, so that sort of that path and where I've gone to, I've kind of gone, okay, well, done that. I'm very much of like, well, I've had a crack at this and done a few years and all that sort of stuff. Now what's next? And then that's kind of led to those moves and those decisions.
Sure. So there must be something in global SIs following you and buying companies that you work for, right?
Yeah, I'd love to say it's all me. I guess it's the reality of how, you know, of the evolution of businesses and so forth, and when the big guys, they need to grow, and that's how the world works. Nothing to do with me. I'm a person that puts smart people together in a room and make sure that we, you know, we deliver on time, and I chase invoices and I look for the next deal and blah, 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 blah. You know, like, it is 100% about that team and about what's created in that organization that becomes really appealing, I feel. It's an interesting track record.
Yeah, yeah. And you've worked for different size partners. And I think unless you've done that, you kind of, everyone knows there's like differences between a partner, right? But if you haven't worked in multiple, you kind of might not know what those differences are. So what would you say some of the benefits or negatives or of both small and large partners?
Yeah, look, I think in the small partners, you've got to do everything, right? There's like put the dishwasher on, take the rubbish out, you know. It's not for everyone, right? Because it's a grind. Yeah. By the same token, on the big end of town, it's not any easier, but it's navigating a whole nother ecosystem of, you know, for me, it's me and a solution architect, or, you know, a few like one or two members of the team on a pursuit, for instance. Whereas in the GSIs, it could be one of, 17 in the deal team, or seven, or whatever. So that kind of feeling of the impact you might make is probably maybe not as great as if it's you and one other. So, yeah, navigating some of that sort of stuff, and I guess the sort of carrot of a conversation I had with somebody of when I was working with a bigger outfit, it was like, well, do you want to spend 80% of your time asking for permission, or do you spend 80% of your time actually doing it? So and that's that kind of resonated. And because the bigger the place, the bigger the deals, which are really exciting and can be all part of that, but along with that is a lot of, you know, red tape.
Yeah, of course. So one of the main reasons I wanted to cover the topic of sales is because, you know, we all know that the Salesforce ecosystem is busy or historically has been busy. And obviously there's been a bit of a tough period for everyone over the last few months. But the market tends to have lots of projects and lots of demand. But someone that's sat in the ecosystem, maybe an admin or a consultant in an end user, or you're looking to get into consulting, might not really understand how a deal comes to be and how the ecosystem works behind the scenes. So what's the relationship between a partner and Salesforce? Like, how does that relationship work?
Typically, it should be lockstep together, right? In the sense of, and this probably comes into where specializations of a partner lie. And for instance, you know, we work in the education, higher ed, you know, RTO space. Or say waste management, for instance, your ability for Salesforce to know that is really important. So that then kicks off a conversation of like, hey, we've got this great opportunity and, you know, there's a pursuit here, and Salesforce will likely go, okay, well, here are the top three partners that you, Mr. Customer, need to, you know, engage with. And the reason for that too is making sure that they pick the right cultural fit with an organization. That sort of like, if you've got a small business, working with, say, the GSIs might not be the right fit, and likewise the other way around, you know, that sort of thing. But essentially, with the pursuit, a deal cycle, and how it comes to be, I mean, there's so many different flavors of how that works. There'll be ones that'll be like, there is like in a pandemic, and when I was working, in the GFC, some stuff just gets like fast forwarded. We've got to do this now. So a deal cycle could be really, really quick. And then other ones are just like the most drawn out, painful experiences that you know, just like, come on, are we doing this or not, sort of thing. And you've just got to be patient. And part of that cycle is showing the value and how well you've done that or not, right? Because there's typically the, you know, the intros and then, you know, the demos and you're working at what, you know, there's all these sort of milestones, but fundamentally, I think the quickest, the way it gets to, you know, a result is really understanding the true agenda of what that organization is trying to do, right? What's the hidden agenda there? And if you can uncover that, you can then quickly go, okay, well, we'll qualify out because that's not a play for us, or you know what I mean, like, or get straight to the point and then be able to then show the value of what you're bringing to the table, and you know, both the execution of that from us and the Salesforce, the suite of capability that you unleash. But for someone who doesn't, know what goes on in the background, like background in the sales, it's a grind. It's really, you've got to just be internally optimistic about this stuff. You've got to have enough out there that you're able to feed the family, you know, your people. Because once you start getting a head of steam and a great, you know, team and a machine, right, that's a serious amount of people to keep busy as well. So, which, you know, plays on your mind as well. I guess that's kind of like what feeds, you know, okay, we've got to always be looking, always be, you know, searching for these opportunities, or how do we uncover more value in existing accounts and stuff like that, you know?
Sure. Yeah, I think like staying on top of pipeline is obviously something you kind of have to learn to do. But if we look back to the beginning of an event in a pipeline, so how an implementation comes to be. So does a company, let's say, like Woolworths have Salesforce, right? But Woolworths decide they're going to do a Salesforce project. It's going to be Greenfield. They've got Siebel. Does the relationship start with Salesforce, or does a partner take that relationship to Salesforce?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's both, because we need to bring business to, you know, as far as our rating goes and being a gold partner. I just want to say we're a gold partner, people. is part of that is it's a quid pro quo, you know. We've got to bring business to Salesforce to maintain that. And actually, if we're doing a good job and we're a specialist in a certain vertical and have a network, we should be able to uncover that. One does that. And likewise, I think what is in a good relationship is like, hey, Toby, you guys have done a great job over here. And, you know, Salesforce going, you guys have done a great job over here. I want to bring you into this other account because, you know, there's something bubbling away over there. And you do CPQ, for instance. So it's a real, you know, what works well is this two-way street in any kind of relationship there. So there's definitely us coming to Salesforce with business, and that kind of kicks off a deal cycle, leveraging our network too. So if we have certain executive alignment at some businesses, that's another way of uncovering and bringing Salesforce in. On we had one in Adelaide. It was heading down Microsoft, and we turned it around. So yeah, it can work a few different ways, but typically the usual kind of steps that go through the procurement process will prevail, right? You know, the due diligence on your speciality, what you bring to the table. And that's kind of like where the working with a GSI or a mid-tier or, you know, originally a smaller partner will come to be, because some businesses will be like, no, I'm not, I've done the Accenture sort of, or the Deloitte or the whoever, PwC before, I want to go with a boutique. And others will go, no, we're not going to put that risk on a small business. We're going to go with a larger organization.
Sure.
You know, it's really, it can go a few different ways.
Yeah. So just on that point around like choosing between a big and small, like, is there like a sweet spot? Is there a cap for a company of your size to be able to work on a scale of project right now? And is there a kind of a bottom that a big global GSI would go to in terms of value of a project or scale of and complexity?
Yeah, I think now there is more push towards smaller partners than just going with a pedigree name. That said, my good friends, you know, at Accenture, like Brendan Connolly and those guys, they're doing some amazing monolithic projects, right? That we just couldn't do that as much as we'd like to right now. Maybe tomorrow, but. But also, you know, Chris and I, you know, our CTO, Chris Baldock, we've been around the block a few times, and we personally love that kind of mid-size 3 to 6 months, get in, get out. I mean, and 3 to 6 months, you know, in SMB sounds like eternity. So we're playing in a mid-market, lower enterprise space, but we've done the big stuff, and actually I feel what's more valuable both sides is smaller and frequent release of functionality than trying to do this big bang, because big bang, it never ends well.
Sure.
It's fraught with risk.
The other question around risk is around kind of the pricing models of a project, because, you know, I hear about fixed price and time and materials. Like, is there an industry norm in the Salesforce ecosystem as to how a project is priced and delivered?
No, I think it typically goes a few, is, you know, there's only a few options that, and actually as a salesperson, your ability to sell one or the other is sometimes the talent there. You know, in the early days, fixed it for us is a good option because, you know, there's a certain portion of funds up front. T&M is, it de-risks. It kind of depends on the it really depends on the project, because I personally think fixed is dangerous and somebody's losing out, you know, because quite often things will be longer for good reason. You know, there's more scope or there's whatever. And then if it's fixed, there's less ability to be able to pivot. If you go T&M and more agile, then, and still sticking to very, you know, strict governance and so forth, you do have the ability to pivot easily, you know, on, okay, that's not a priority anymore and this is, so we'll move across. So it's, and then, you know, we work on annuity contracts like long-term managed services agreements, which that's, you know, that's reoccurring and that's good for both sides, I think, you know, where there's this forecast, you know, a bit of more of a flat line than, because typically in, if you're just doing projects, it's quite lumpy and can be a little bit nervy at times. But yeah, I think in the Salesforce ecosystem, to go fixed is actually probably constraining the true nature of the ability to be able to kind of pivot and change. And even like with a pandemic, you know, that's kind of like really brought that to the forefront, you know, of that flexibility.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned before about the ability to manage staff and keep your staff busy. And you know, projects are lumpy, right? Sometimes there's a lot of them, other times there aren't. Is there a magic formula managing that kind of headcount and pipeline and bench time and things like that?
Yeah, it's a constant paranoia. No, it's the fundamentals apply, I think, in business and for that sort of stuff. Like, you know, strategy, people, execution, and cash, right? That if you're focusing on all, if you're looking at all of these four elements, then the management of those, because of those and all of that sort of stuff will work, right? Because if you've got the right strategy in place, like you got a very clear value prop, we're specialized in this, then that's going to help, right? With the new work and the go to market, very clear. You got the right people in the seat, the customers fall in love with them and they're like, okay, we want more. So your chances of, you know, return business are higher. The execution of it, so the methodology of how you deliver. We're a big proponent of service blueprint design. You know, the people, process, technology, we do blueprinting. We do this as-is state to the to-be state, because you show me a business, I'll show you a process that needs cleaning up, right? And then Salesforce underpinning that. And then cash, right? And in this pandemic, cash. You got to have cash flow, you have business coming in. I think what's helped me be in this role as a CEO, being sales all my life, is knowing the fundamentals of a business. And yeah, sales and business coming in and cash is really important. But the other three that I mentioned are super important, like just as important. So those kind of like those four elements are kind of like where I have a thought about all of those four every day. And then that kind of helps that kind of management of, because if we've got the right people, then maybe, you know, the way you utilize your consultants and so forth will benefit in some ways, right? So utilization of people as opposed to pumping up rates and all that sort of jazz is much more effective, and being smart around how they're utilized.
Sure. In terms of managing pipeline, like at what point are you, can you be confident of something coming in? Because I'll speak to a candidate every week that says, you know, a partner, they're waiting on a deal. They've told me they'll hire me as soon as this deal comes in. But it's hard to know that person, that the partner could still be competing with another partner that's also told someone else that. Yeah. So there's two people waiting for this role and only one of them is going to get it. So from being able to predict pipeline, is there like something you can say, you know, accurately, we get to this point, it's, you know, gone past a certain stage in the process, it's going to come in?
Yeah, there's definitely an element of, you know, qualification. And then like for us, we have, you know, the qualification and then deal shaping and then negotiations. And usually by that stage, it's, you know, it's one or two bake-off kind of thing with another partner, for instance. But I think, you know, it comes back down to relationship building and knowing and trying to extract the real agenda here of information that then is going to feed, because it is a dark art, like predicting when a deal is going to drop and what's it going to be and all of that sort of stuff is, you know, is challenging, because we don't know that there's a certain, you know, we're up against a certain technology, and the executive, for instance, who's picking this is KPI'd on this, you know, project, and they're a HubSpot fan.
Yeah.
And they go with that, right? You know, there's all sorts of different elements that affect the deal. So I think really the key is getting, you know, is really digging and getting that information, because all that information is going to go, okay, yep, this is not a high probability deal, and then kind of like and be true to yourself about the pipeline. This pipeline can be very, very, can give you a false sense of security, right? You've got all these deals out there and it tallies a massive amount, but the reality is, who's going to sign in the next 30 days? And have you got paperwork out there going through legal? That's the only way I know something's going to happen, if it's with legal.
Yeah, yeah.
That's when it's done. It's not signed until it's signed, right? So, yeah, it's a tricky one. And I feel for everyone, you know, on all the competes that we do and all of that sort of stuff and especially in this environment, there's a lot of factors that are at play and will affect whether we're starting on a project next week or is this being punted another month for good reason.
Yeah, of course. And you've mentioned throughout about having niches or, you know, a focus and being a specialist in a field. And like, I completely see the value of that. Like, I just do Salesforce recruitment, right? So I'm niche in the recruitment world. But has the pandemic made you think about that? Because had you been a specialist in tourism and travel, it would have been a very different market for you right now, right? So like, does a pandemic make you think, actually, do we need a broader focus? Or does that then take you away from who you are at the core of your business?
Yeah, no, absolutely, all of the above. It does, like, the beautiful thing about Salesforce services is that you can, well, for us, I guess coming back to our approach to service blueprint design and, you know, really business process optimization, that sort of stuff, we've been able to pivot with that. You know, still doing Salesforce and still, you know, we implemented CPQ in high tech. We're working on education and then waste management and the NDIS space. All of them, completely different industries, they've all valued and worked and utilized this blueprinting approach. So while we're a specialist, we do core CRM and we hone in on this blueprinting, we have the ability to pivot to different industries that will keep the lights on for us and so forth. Like, there's no doubt, I've got some friends who are working in the travel space. It's horrendous. It's hardcore. When it just dries up, I know the feeling. I was working selling advertising in a finance mag in the GFC when Lehman Brothers went down and people were just not answering the phone. It's scary and that sort of stuff. I think the beautiful thing about this ecosystem, though, is that ability to kind of go, well, they're transferable, you know, what we've done over here. And actually, that was, you know, some years ago about working in Salesforce and then working with other industries to go, hey, you know what they're doing over here? I know you guys don't have the budget of Combank or something, but, you know, there's stuff in communities we can do that will be awesome look and feel and all the rest of it. Because financial services set the expectations of everybody's, you know, online experience, which is really unfair for an SMB.
Sure.
But it was kind of transferable, right? Of going, okay, well, let's take what we've learned over here and apply it over there. And I think that prevails right now. And yeah, it was Amit Chowdhury over at SAS, which is Cognizant now, who was just like, get into Fins, be, you know, the best and the specialist here, and you can't go wrong. And that was true, and that was something that really kind of like stuck with me going forward. Was really valuable.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, cool. So over the years, things have changed. The platform has like, it's huge, right? There's so much. But what have you seen change in the customers' expectations?
That it's Salesforce, so you should know about it. So you should know it all.
So they haven't kept up with the breadth of the platform. They've kind of just seen it as one thing.
Yeah, I think there is a bit of that. So our job is partly to kind of shield the customer from all the different. I think you've said it on a few of your posts where it's like, hey, I'm looking for an admin. Need to be an architect and a blah 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 blah, you know, all of this sort of stuff. And I'm like, you've just rattled off a unicorn. If anyone can find that person, let me know.
So
those expectations have changed because the platform is vast, right? But I think what still is important is keeping it simple and keeping it to platform and working in an agile ethos is part of our education back to the customer base, right? It is vast and it's amazing. And that's why, you know, we've had discussions recently about backing a platform play, you know, instead of building something bespoke on a portal that, you know, has its, you know, potential benefits. If you back the platform and you stay on with that, the R&D and the release and the, you know, the innovation that's going to come out over the years with Salesforce because of this, you know, the acquisitions and the broadness of the platform is going to benefit you long term. You know what I mean? So it's kind of, it's getting vast and it's a bit more complex. And as far as the tech side of it, all people, you know, that's getting broader and broader. And we've got to kind of, we're helping the customer navigate all the different skills you need. The other side of the coin is that the platform is just getting more and more, you know, rich with functionality.
Sure.
Back when I remember Wave was a standalone sort of thing, or Einstein, and now, you know, embedded into the platform, it's phenomenal.
So as a salesperson, and to be successful as a salesperson, how much do you need to know about the platform? Like how deep does your knowledge need to go, and broad, I guess?
Yeah, a little bit about everything. I think you've got to be careful of what sort of advice you're giving and where that's coming from and what your knowledge is. Absolutely, you've got to be careful because there's a few different ways to approach certain solutions or areas in the business. Definitely, you know, a salesperson needs to be able to get up there without a solution engineer or a solution arc. So you have a whiteboard, a bit of a concept, and that's for sure in the consulting space, because the customer doesn't need another salesperson in there, right? Because they kind of at that point they get it. Salesforce, great platform. We're just working out like how we're gonna, you know, especially coming from an SI, how are we gonna execute? How are we gonna make this get to this Nirvana state? That's the key. I think, on this, with our business and the sales side of things there is how do we hold the hand and navigate and provide that support and all of the things that are going to come up along the way that you need to be prepared for. That sort of stuff is super important, which is knowing at a high level, you know, the platform, right? But I think when, you know, you get to the next level down, that's when don't try and overstretch your own thinking. Get the right people in the room. And that's Chris and I worked it together over the years, you know, and we balance each other out really well because he's super honest and I'm a sales guy. and working together and having that dynamic has been really, you know, has been really successful and really amazing because we just, we balance each other out. There's an energy that I love and that comes out in what we do, but then there's also a pragmatic side about how this is actually going to play out and what solution you would do. And that's, you know, Chris and our team and our solution architects do that. So yeah, that's it. That's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've been a successful salesperson. You're now the CEO of a company. For anyone watching this on video, we can see your own private golf course behind you. It's been a pretty successful career, but we've gone through a challenge. Well, it was not your just in case anyone thinks I'm being serious.
More poke.
But we've gone through some challenging times, and obviously as a salesperson, you're constantly looking at pipeline and you know your mind is on growth and looking forward. How has your mindset had to change through a difficult period? Not saying necessarily the business has gone through a difficult period, but the world is going through a difficult period, right? So how's your mindset changed to be a CEO, and what else do you have to consider now that you wouldn't have considered before?
I read a book called Anti-Fragile recently, and the stresses we get in life are really important. Like they, you know, the battle scars, all this stuff that we go through is part of living, you know, and sales is, you know, is one of these ones that you've just got to pick yourself up and you've got to go, okay, there's another way. Well, we've lost now, and you take and you feel that feeling, and you feel it, and you hang, and you don't sort of like, you know, fob it off, but you've got to get on and move on, and it's because there's always going to be something, right? Whether it's a difficult stakeholder, a pandemic, you know, a project going awry, something, you know, whatever it is, there's always going to be these stresses, and those stresses are actually they're good for your health, because if you have none, and then you have one, you know, you're not going to be able to cope with it. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it's really there's all sorts of analogies that go around my mind about sales and this and work and how you deal with these sorts of things. And really, it's like golf, right? It's not about hitting great shots all the time. It's just less bad shots. And another great book that I read about radical candor, like leading with truth and honesty, truth and love. Where it's we're being flat out honest about what the reality of certain situations are, but how are we going to work through this, you know, and that sort of stuff. I don't know. I'm not sure if this is a great answer, a bit waffly, but the bottom line is that there's going to be always these sorts of things that come up in life. The sales side of it is probably an area where you can deal with this sort of stuff because you're getting rejections all the time, and you've got to live with it. You've got to move. You've got to keep going. And how successful you are is how you can pick yourself up and keep moving along. Mm-hmm. But yeah, look, this where we are right now is a fascinating time. I've tried to like I said, I have the guitar here, and we were having the virtual coffees and all that sort of stuff. Trying not to be like David Brent from The Office, but I use humor, you know, I try to keep it light, keep it fun. And, you know, it's been a really interesting time to make sure we keep that camaraderie going and keep people able to share how they're feeling, right? Because it's really important to make sure that keeping that contact through stuff like where it's not as, you know, we're not in front of each other and it's just a weird sort of surreal world going on, right? It's still kind of pinch myself that there's a kind of pandemic going on, and what we're dealing with now.
So do you think you set the tone for that, like in terms of being fragile to a degree? Does that come from the CEO and the leader? Like, do you have to let people know that you're sometimes, you know, not feeling humorous and upbeat, or do you always have to be in that mindset and frame when you're in front of the crew?
No, I think absolutely. People need to feel like there's, you know, there's somebody, you know, driving the ship, driving the the boat, and that we've got a path. We had a session last year to really internal session around the direction, some of the things that we're aiming for, and all of that sort of stuff. And we've largely kicked all of those KPIs. But absolutely, I like to be honest, and if there's something keeping me up at night, I'll share with the team, because, you know, it's, I think that honesty and vulnerability, everyone has it, right? But you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like, I'm not into this just blankly, everything's super fine, because it's not, right? And there'll be ups and downs. Actually, I did a whole bunch of Anthony Robbins stuff early on in my career. And if you try to find the highs, just in the highs, you're going to be left hanging for, you know, 50% of the time. So when the chips are down, and say if there is something to do with work or something to do with the pandemic or whatever it is, we need to hit it face on, right, and talk about it we have retros about projects. We have retros about all sorts of things to make sure that we're not just kind of like floating over some of the key issues that are around or whatever. But yeah, I think a certain vulnerability is nice. It's endearing. It's kind of, we're human, mm-hmm. right? I'm not perfect by any means. I hire perfect people. They're amazing. All my team are just absolutely awesome. But yeah, my job is to make sure that, actually that's why I'm really enjoying this sort of shift into this role compared to sales before, because it's more about the relationships and the connections that I've built over the years. It's about that internally and working with my team and all that sort of stuff. And I love it. I get juiced up about it. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, from the outside looking in, I think like culture-wise, from what I've seen, it's kind of been maintained through this period, and the guitar is central to that. But yeah, I think you know, it's seemed as though things have remained fairly consistent from a culture, and even though you're not sat together and face to face the whole time. So
yeah, I hope so. I hope so. Again, Chris and I, when we were sort of really, you know, kicking off, what do we want to do, and how do we want to build Cloudworks and so forth. The Netflix manifesto, I've never seen that, where they, about their culture and how they operate, was really powerful. Like, and I think you'll find if you talk to Kieran or, you know, to the gang, we walk the talk as far as treat people like adults. We have certain results and so forth, and that's what we're focused on. We're not about sitting there in the office to make sure I can see you doing, you know, working away, and I'm getting value from it. It's not about that, you know. It's really about the fundamentals of what needs to be done, and if you can do it from the golf course, that's fantastic too. Oh, and that's such a bullshit line, isn't it? Like, you know, make a sale and I'll go and play golf.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, when you make a sale, that's when it starts.
Yeah.
That's when the fun begins. But yeah, culture is big time. If I could make a family band out of the whole, out of the whole organization, I'd do that. But I think people might get a bit annoyed.
Sure, give it a try. Well, look, thank you so much for your time. I'm sure you've got tea time booked shortly, so I'll have to let you go. But for anyone that does want to hit you up, ask some questions, find out more about Cloudworks, where's the best place to get in touch?
Yeah, well, on the website, we're hiring for a sales director at the moment. I want that job at cloudworks.co, or they can ping me on LinkedIn. But it's really good. Thanks so much for the invite. I feel quite humbled and special. And I look forward to catching up with you for a beer or a coffee at some point.
Sounds good. Well, look, thanks so much, and good luck with everything that's to come. And looking forward to seeing the continued growth of the business.
Yeah, awesome.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talent Hub Talk. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you could subscribe and also leave a short review. We're keen for this podcast to reach as many people in the Salesforce ecosystem as possible, and your reviews will help us do that.